Blog Talk Radio.
From the San Francisco Bay Area, it's time for Live from the Bay with Joey. Here's Joey.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Live from the Bay with Joey. This is Joey, and tonight we're going to have a great show with our guest, Allison Arngrim, well-known as Nellie Olson on the much-loved hit television series, Little House on the Prairie. Before we do that, we have some cranking hot topics that we're going to cover, some interesting newsworthy items that deserve or perhaps do not deserve our attention. You decide. And let's be sure to wish our former audio producer here, Jammin, well on a speedy recovery from ankle surgery. From time to time, I will be joined with some friends and guests that will help cover our hot topics. So, anyway, as you know, it's time for us to just crank up some hot topics.
We're just gonna crank it up, crank it up!
Okay, folks, you know I've been on my bandwagon about in the San Francisco Bay Area. We have had to, in certain areas, pay this charge now for plastic bags. And, you know, I was on my high horse about this, thinking it was the stupidest thing I've ever heard of. And they've got these flimsy paper bags, and it's just ridiculous. I just went on and on. Well, you know, the other day I was just thinking while I was at a store, isn't it interesting that they still sell those plastic bags in, you know, the plastic bags that we use for our garbage? With no problem, and that's going to continue. Why are they not phasing those out? But they're phasing every other plastic bag out. And then again, if you want a bag, you either have to bring your own or you have to use their paper ones. So anyway, just thought that that was kind of interesting. I asked some of you to give me your 5 cents, and let's see what I got. I got a couple of responses. Thomas said, I agree with this, with your situation on the plastic bags. I hate paper bags. I'm boycotting too. Well, thank you, Thomas. I appreciate your support there. And then we've got from Jeanette from the San Francisco Bay Area. She said, this really is too bad, and it is ridiculous in regards to plastic bags. On the plastic bags. And I agree with you. Not much we can do. We just have to grin and bear it. I also wanted to know if you guys have seen this. This was kind of disheartening to me. In the news, a man accused of putting a six-week-old baby daughter in freezer. Now, this guy is 25 years old, Tyler James Deutch, 25, and he was charged with assault of a child in the first degree. But basically, I guess he didn't like hearing his little daughter cry, and he decided, the way the story reads, that he was going to put her in the freezer. And apparently, the child is supposed to recover, and this happened out of the city of Roy in Washington State. The child suffered with a broken arm and leg and a head injury, but is to believe to survive. I couldn't even believe this. It was just seemed so unreal to me. I guess the mother was 22 years of age. This father's 25, and I guess the mother went to a next-door neighbor and was able to call for help, call the police. So that was just unbelievable. Anything having to do with child abuse really disturbs me quite a bit. This story coming out of Beijing, China, a mother of a baby boy. So the mother of a baby boy found stuck in a residential building's sewer pipe in China has been found. So apparently, the way it reads is kind of interesting because it sounds like the mother of this child was found stuck in this sewer pipe, but it doesn't look like that. As you continue reading, it says that the unidentified 22-year-old mother said her baby slipped from her hands and went down a sewer pipe. Unbelievable. These stories just blow my mind because it's hard to believe that these things exist. So anyway, I just wanted to say that we're going to cover a few other topics later on, but without making our guest wait any further. Folks, tonight I'm happy to introduce to you Alison Arngrim, best known to viewers worldwide for her portrayal of the incredibly nasty Nellie Olson on much-loved, long-running hit television series Little House on the Prairie. She can currently be seen in independent films for the Love of May with RuPaul and Patricia Neal, Last Place on Earth. She recently began foray into French cinema with the role of Edith in the French detective comedy Jean-Pierre Hockey's La Dio. We will learn more about her career, book, and tour. Folks, let's welcome to Live from the Bay with Joey, Alison Arngrim. Alison, how are you doing? Are you there?
I'm still here. Yes,
you're still there.
Yes, it's awesome. Hello. Hi.
Hi, how are you?
I'm very good.
Oh, well, great to have you here.
You sound very chipper yourself. You're up in San Francisco. We like that.
Well, I'm from the San Francisco Bay Area.
Cool.
So I don't live in the
that
city of San Francisco. But, you know, the chipper thing might have something to do with I think I'm about on my third iced coffee. So that always kind of helps, too, you know what I'm saying? So, Alison, let's talk about your career. I understand you were born in New York, and both your parents were from Canada. Is that right?
Yeah. That is correct. Yeah, okay. I was because my whole family were actors. My parents actually founded the Totem Theater in Vancouver, which the Vancouver Playhouse is really descended from. And then they were in New York. My father was on Broadway with Albert Finney and Luther. And my mother did cartoon voices, Casper, Gumby, Sweet Polly Purebred, Underdog's Girlfriend, and Davy of Davy and Goliath.
Oh, no way. Are you serious? Casper?
My mother was Davy,
Gumby?
And my mother was Casper. My mother was Gumby.
And
her big claim to fame in New York, her big breakthrough was the First Family album, where she was Little Caroline and John John on the First Family comedy album that was the one about JFK with Vaughn Meader and everything, playing the president.
Oh, my gosh.
But she was huge. She was like Miss Voiceover. That was her thing. And then, you know, so by the time when I was 7 years old, I thought everybody was on TV. My whole family were in show business.
but not everybody can say that their mother was the voice of Gumby and Casper.
Really? Exactly. It's
right.
And it was weird because I was right at the right age for that. She was doing most of the Gumby and Sweet Polly Purebred stuff and the Davy stuff in like she did through like late 50s to early 60s. So when I was like 6 years old, 1968, I turned on the TV and it was all my mother.
Mm.
All my cartoons were my mother's voice. It was
How funny. Well, let me see. Now, I understand that you started your career at the age of 12, is that right?
No, I started my career at about 5 or 6. I got Little House at 12. And
I'd
started working at 6, you know, commercials and small parts, and I actually did a movie when I was 10.
Wow.
And then I didn't get a lot of work. And my father sat me down, I was about 11 and a half, and told me I wasn't booking anything and my career might be over. And I might not work again until I was 18. I was totally washed up at 11. And then I went on the audition.
Funny.
I got Little House on the Prairie. So technically, Little House on the Prairie was my comeback role.
I see.
My first comeback was
before
when I was
you
in
went.
Trouble.
Yeah. Before you retired, right?
Right, right. There was like, are you making a comeback? No, my first comeback was 12. I'm on my 17th comeback at this point.
How fun! So now, how did you actually land Little House on the Prairie?
Well, I was a working kid actor.
Okay.
And I had an agent. I went to auditions all the time, and, you know, you go to auditions, you don't always get everything. And, you know, I've talked about this, a lot of the kid actor parts back then, they were boring. You know, it was the era of the Brady Bunch kind of stuff.
Oh, of course. That was during my time, too.
All these sort of sickeningly cute children. You know, you'd go, you read for a character for an audition if you were a kid, and it was just so icky, sicky poo. And then I go to this audition, I read for the part of Laura. I read for the part of Mary. Hysterical. Didn't get any of those. And then they called me back, and I hadn't read the Little House books. I did not read the Little House books as a kid. I know, I'm bad. I didn't read them until much later. I get there. I didn't know there was an Ellie Olsen. I didn't know there was a villain in this thing. I had no idea how many people were there. I get there. I start reading these pages, and I turn to my father, and I'm 12 years old. I said, "Dad, this girl's a total bitch." My father, "What are you talking about?" I read it for him. He cracks right up. He goes, "Don't change a thing." So I go in, and I found it rather refreshing. Here was a character who wasn't sweet and darling. She was horrible. And I thought, well, that'll be fun. And then, of course, I got it. That's
but, you
the
know,
one I get.
I mean, but you know, Allison, when I'm – so I know she was supposed to be horrible and she was supposed to be the bitch and all this kind of stuff. But, you know, also, I've seen little snippets, you know, because once you hit 50, you know, you kind of forget certain things. So, but I've seen snippets.
I don't know where my car keys are. Okay, yeah.
Yeah. And you know, to be quite honest with you, there were some other little girls in that Little House on the Prairie that weren't exactly really sweet either, you know? So, I mean, maybe you weren't, quote, the nicest little girl, but, I mean, do you really think you were that much of a...
Tormenting, stuttering children till they sobbed. Having the poor little girl who's one leg shorter than the other, she gets special shoes so she can run and play, and I say, let's all take off our shoes and go wading in the creek. Blackmail. Lying. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was pretty bad.
All right, I believe you.
I was horrible.
So let me ask you, so you worked with Michael Landon. Now, I heard that relationship that you two had were more like he was like a taunting big brother.
Yeah,
or a crazy brother, is that
really,
right?
Really, I mean, he was very much paw to Melissa Gilbert. I mean, they really bonded, and he was very much a father figure to her. And her dad, you know, her dad died when she was quite young, so here she was on the show, and now she got, you know, Michael Landon. And so he absolutely was very fatherly to her. But to me, and he was so crazy. This is a guy who, you know, I said played a poor Minnesota dirt farmer with a $400 Beverly Hills haircut. The guy's playing the perfect Paul Engels, but he was married and divorced twice. He's married three times. He smoked, he drank, he told dirty jokes, he drove a Ferrari. He's not really Paul Engels. guy should have gotten an Emmy. I mean, he was a genius. He had everyone convinced.
Oh, how funny.
His idea, you know, the rap party every year, he'd take us to the racetrack to bet on the horses. I mean, this is who he was. And
nice Paul, thanks so much.
Right?
Wow.
I mean, there's Paul behind the plow, and yet when he's done, he lights up a Marlboro, gets a drink, and jumps in the Ferrari and goes to the Playboy Jazz Festival, okay?
This is
what it was actually like. But he's a very, very funny man, very funny person, lovely, lovely.
He must have got a kick out of everybody thinking this was such a family-oriented, you know, show, right? When he's living a totally... 180-degree lifestyle.
Right. Well, here he was. You know, he starts on Bonanza, you know, and he's at the Cartwrights, and he's Little Joe, and then he's Paul Engels. And then he followed it up with Highway to Heaven, where he played an angel. Please.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
And, you know, he's, you know, drinking his Wild Turkey and smoking his Marlboros, and, you know.
Did that ever change for him?
No. And, you know, even when, you know, towards the end, you know, he died, sadly, of cancer,
right.
Pancreatic.
Right.
You know, and as he said, he tried to sort of clean up his act, but it's like, you know, a little late in the game. He's like, I want a hamburger, please. You know, trying to, you know, clean up his diet at the end. He's like, oh, please, how long have I got? Give me a burger, come on. He lived life to the fullest.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't miss anything.
Mm-hmm.
He, as I said, he had a great sense of humor. He liked practical jokes.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, I mean, he was a bundle of contradictions because he was doing all this. But he was great with the kids. He was like the best director of children ever. And he was so good to us and held us to really high work standard and made sure we all went to school and did our homework. I mean, it was crazy.
Mm-hmm. But he used to play practical jokes on you as well, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, he was constantly mocking me. I mean, the Nelly thing. I go down the hill in the wheelchair. I'm standing in this pond of dirty water. And he said, do you have a swimming pool at your house? I said, no, I don't. He said, oh, after this, you'll be able to swim in your toilet.
Unbelievable.
Every show has a Christmas episode. I think we're the only family show that had like 7 Halloween episodes. You know,
with starring him.
Yeah. Well, you remember? You know, his first big break was I Was a Teenage Werewolf.
Oh no, I didn't know that.
Yes, his first big break was I Was a Teenage Werewolf. He was a teenage werewolf, and he loved that movie. His birthday was Halloween. His birthday's October 31st.
Oh, no, seriously?
With Halloween and werewolves and dressing up, he's out of his mind.
Oh, my gosh. Really? I did not know that. Now, I'm an October baby, too. I'm an October baby, too, and I get really bent out of shape when people go, well, so is it close to Halloween? I'm like, no.
Like,
although
no.
It's sort of, it's like, yeah, well, it's close enough. It's within a week. But, you know,
the 31st, and if he could have made every day Halloween and just had, like, jack-o'-lanterns on every street corner, I mean, he'd have done it.
Wow. Wow. Unbelievable. Well, now, I understand from your role, from that role, you received an award, Young Artist Award in 2002, right?
I did. I got the Lifetime Achievement Award.
Wow.
You know, I didn't know it was the Young Artist Award, but when you're a child star, I think if you live past 40, you get the Lifetime Achievement Award because you're still around.
Well, that's pretty phenomenal. I mean, you know, when you think of an actress like, you know, like, say, Shirley Temple, right, who actually has been a resident of the Bay Area for years and years and years.
Cool.
I mean, she's, you know, she was a child star. And and here she is in her 80s, and people still remember her, you know, still adore her. So
right?
I think people will forever hate your character. No, I'm just kidding. No,
well,
I'm
probably.
Sure.
Hey, but yeah.
No, you were. I don't think you were. I mean, I part of that was kind of funny, you know? And
well,
I think a lot
it.
Of people probably.
Yeah.
Yeah. Totally. And I think probably a lot of people could relate to your character because there's a lot of kids, especially, you know, boys, we do the same thing when we're playing. You know, you like teasing and you like harassing and, you know, and that's just reality. That's the real world.
Oh,
so I think that a lot of people related to you.
They love the bad girl. And also some people said it was great because it was sort of like Nellie just vented everything. There are people who, like, on a bad day, I just wanted to be like Nellie Olson and tell everyone off. And people love her. And, I mean, as I joke about the French, you know, the French don't think that Nellie Olson was mean. They think she's French. French people love her. Oh, the bad girl, you know. People like the bitchy one, the bad one, the rebel. And now people are kind of coming back around and going, hey, I did like Nellie Olson.
So let me ask you, is there any part of you in your being that is similar to Nellie?
Every morning for 10 minutes before that first cup of coffee.
Is that right?
Oh, yeah, I wake up in the morning, it's like, what? What do you all want? Leave me alone.
Right.
But yes, my husband jokes about it. Just get her the coffee, just get her the coffee.
Really? Yeah, you know, I have a lot of times I have, you know, mornings like that, and I'll say something, and somebody will say something like this.
You
they'll
can't say,
say
that. Are you crazy?
You know what I'm saying? But I say it anyway. I don't give a rip. And then I become really nice, you know, for the most
part.
Right.
I always pity people who make the mistake of calling me very early in the morning and waking me up early to bug me about something because I'm like, what? I'd like to, there's no filter. I'm not censoring myself until like 8 a.m. So it's like, what? Why are you calling me?
Yeah, that's funny. Now we know about the Young Artist Award that you got in 2002. Then I heard in 2008 you received a TV Land Award. Now, was
very,
that...
Very, very proud of that.
Okay, so tell me about that. And was that also for your role on Little House?
Indeed. I received the award from TV Land for character most desperately in need of a timeout.
Mm-hmm.
And I was very pleased because it was all the kid characters from TV shows who were bratty or difficult or smart mouthed, and I was selected as the character most desperately in need of a timeout, and I got to go to the TV Land Awards, and I got up to get the award, and I said, "You hate me! You all really, really hate me."
Oh, how funny! That's funny. Well, now, so I guess what I'm wondering, so TV Land still does it still play that? Does it still play?
I think so. They were cycling it. Right now, what are we on? Hallmark, PAX, Inspiration TV. It depends, like, what market you're in, what city. But it's always somewhere. I think if you live on the border between the U.S. and Canada, between the Canadian stations and U.S. stations, you can watch it six times a day.
Oh, is that right? So do you still have fan mail? Do people still try to get in touch with
you? Oh, my God, yes. I had to put instructions on how to get an autographed picture. Excuse me, I just put a blueberry in my mouth. Sorry.
Nice.
I put it up on my Tumblr, my Facebook, how to get an autographed picture, because people were writing to me and they said, well, I want the picture. And I'm like, sure. But they would send me these teeny little envelopes. And I was like, guys, I'll get you the autographed picture, but I'm not Office Depot. Could you let, you know, just give me the self-addressed stamped envelope, put a little cardboard in there, you know, and you help me out. And then, sure, I'll autograph it. I'll write custom things on it. What do you want? So, yeah, I do. I get mail, and I get it from all over the world, the French, the Spanish, the Polish, the Argentinians.
Mm-hmm.
My Facebook is out of control. Well, I have three Facebook pages. I have Allison Arngrim, but I'm at like 5,300.
Mm-hmm.
And then Allison M. Arngrim, and then I have the Allison Arngrim fan page that you like. And what Peruvians are writing in this week. It's Peruvians and Argentinians. And I just got my first piece of fan mail from China. So it's in like 140 countries, but currently the Argentinians, and on my newer page, my one, the Allison M. Arngrim, it seems to be heavily French people. I mean, I do spend a lot of time in France, but it's like almost all French people on my second page.
So China.
Yes. Believe me, I was quite surprised.
I bet. Do they ever ask, Allison, who do you think you are? Who do you think
you are?
I love accents. Those are all me, believe it or not.
Those are adorable.
Yeah,
people are like, are you like that? My friends really take it's a burden for my friends. They take a beating. They tell people, oh, I'm friends with Allison Arngrim. They're like, what's she like? It's hysterical. They're constantly getting hassled.
Oh, how funny. That's too much. Well, now you're saying the French and the Spanish. You know, I speak Spanish fluently. So do you have a lot of fans in Spain?
I do, and I do. I have the Spanish and in Mexico and in all of South America.
Well, if you need any translation or help, you just let me know.
I may very well call you.
And I will be very happy to help you. Yes?
I have, let's see, I got the 5,000 friends. We're half of them Argentinians. Yeah, if you go on Facebook and you type in Little House in the Prairie or Michael Landon, half the pages that come up are like Argentinian. They're all in 87 different languages. It's great.
Oh, how fun. Well, Argentinians crack me up because now my dad's family was from Italy, and then my mom's family's from Spain. But interestingly, Argentinians, for the most part, will speak Spanish with an Italian accent.
Isn't that weird?
They put a lot of Italian type of influence on, like, for instance, horse. We could say in Spanish, you either say caballo, or you say in Spain, or you say caballo. But in Argentina, you say caballo. You know? Yeah, and it's like, you know what, we're not speaking Italian, folks, we're speaking Spanish. But, you know, both languages are so beautiful, and actually Italian and Spanish are so closely linked. And
isn't it in Colombia, I'm trying to think, where is it, where they have the accent where people talk like this, they speak Spanish?
No, that's Spain.
That's Spain. That's Castilian Spanish.
Castilian Spanish, which is primarily northern Spain. No. It's C's and Z's. So instead of saying cinco, you would say cinco. And instead of Z's, if your name was Fernandez, it would actually be pronounced Fernandez, T-H.
Oh, my. Well, that's like even in France. I mean, huge regional accents, and it's a trip. You know, you just when you think you're understanding what everyone's saying, you go to a different part of the country, and it's like, what?
Yeah. Well, you know, there's old wives' tales about that. They used to say that the reason was there was a king in Spain, and then, you know, I've heard different stories, and he had a lisp, and then some people said the king in Spain was gay, and he had a lisp, and I'm like, come on, folks. And then
it sounds a little cartoon.
Yeah,
but,
it sounds a little bit off. And then there was one, the most recent, which sounds the most intelligent, is that due to the Greek influence on the Spanish language with the theta, that's why the Spaniards utilize that. But it's primarily in northern Spain.
Okay.
Yeah, so there you go. Just a little bit of trivia.
But don't start working that lisp if I'm in the south,
There you go. So, So you spent 7 years on Little House, but you've had guest spots on, like, say, the Love Boat.
Oh, yeah.
Zeppelin.
It's the law.
Right.
It's the
and
law,
Zeppelin with Fantasy Island.
Oh, Harvey Willis.
Yeah. Oh, you know what? I got to tell you something. My mom's maiden name is Spanish, but it's Vilches, V-I-L-C-H-E-Z. So I used to tease her, and I say, do you think maybe he's lost relative? Because you know, Hervé Villiches, you know. And my mom would just glare at me like, you know, drop dead, you know.
I got no idea.
Take a flying leap. Yeah. And then, like, you did, you know, NBC Movie of the Week, I Married Wyatt Earp. Is that right?
I Married Wyatt Earp, starring Marie Osmond, who apparently marries Wyatt Earp. She becomes Marie Earp, I guess. But yes, it's about Wyatt Earp. It's about the Clantons and the Earps and the whole thing. But it's apparently, what was her name? Josephine. The woman who married Wyatt Earp, she wrote a book about her life with Wyatt Earp. And they decided, somebody said, we'll make this a TV movie. And Marie Osmond said, oh, that's a good vehicle. And that's the thing is she was an actress and was touring the Wild West with this theater group that was doing things like Pirates of Penzance, and they played Tombstone, Arizona, and she met Wyatt Earp and quit the company and hung out with him and wound up getting married. It's a bizarre tale.
Marie Osmond decided
to make an NBC TV movie of the week starring herself and produce this with her, Wyatt Earp, and I played her wild champagne-drinking goofball friend.
Ah.
Because she had to be really, really goody-goody, so in any of the scenes, it was like champagne. She, you know, has to make a point that her character's like, no, no champagne. I'm like, I'll have it. So,
well, yeah, and she's a goody-goody. She's a Mormon, too, you know, in real life,
she's
terribly
goody-goody. Although,
she's a total goody-goody.
Warp sense of humor for a chick is supposed to be that goody-goody, because I spent 3 weeks in the desert with her. And no, she did absolutely no drinking, no smoking, no coffee. But, you know, she hired all these totally mad people to be the hairdresser, makeup people, and everyone else, people drinking and doing drugs and everything else. And she's like, they do really good hair and makeup. I like them. And she didn't care what anyone else did. Boy, she didn't judge anybody else. She said, you could do whatever you wanted on that set, as long as you got your job done. The director was drinking. The makeup people were high. She didn't care.
You know what? I think I always had a crush on her. I just thought she was the greatest thing, you know?
Very beautiful person.
Oh, my God. And you can see it, you know, it just radiates out of her very being. But I know a lot of Mormons, and I know a lot of them are on there. What cracks me up is,
but
like,
she was really fun. She was really fun.
Yeah.
I was surprised at how intelligent, funny, businesswoman she really was.
Yeah.
But it was truly strange doing that.
I'll tell you, I had this boss. And he was a devout Mormon, a former bishop, right?
Wow.
And so, yeah, so he was giving me, you know, so, like, I own stock within Starbucks, so I tend to frequent Starbucks quite
coffee?
A bit, you know.
Coffee?
Yeah, exactly. So he was, like, making a joke about it, and I usually go for a half tap in the morning. So he was making a joke, and he's like, this is so ridiculous. What a big money-making operation with caffeine and stuff like that. And so he was going on his bandwagon about that. At lunch, he proceeded to have two Cokes side by side, one diet and one regular. Okay. So now, yeah, exactly. So I'm like looking at him, and he's like, you're going to ask me a question. I'm like, you think? And he said, is this around? And I said, caffeine. And he said, so you're going to ask me why I'm drinking two Cokes, right? And I said, yeah, you know, just out of curiosity, because you just gave me such a hassle about the, you know, the half cap that I was having earlier today. But yet he goes, because you see, coffee, when you get it, is hot. It's a hot caffeinated beverage.
Yeah.
This is not. It's cold.
He's so full of it.
And I was like, are you what planet are you from? Well, I don't want to know the planet because, you know, then he would tell me. But, you know,
he's totally yanking your chain, because I hung out with Marie and her mom, and they didn't drink no Coca-Cola neither.
Oh, they didn't? Well, but then I said to him, I go, now can you have Coke? Because doesn't the Mormon church, like, maybe they own stock in Coca-Cola? Maybe they own part of Coca-Cola. I don't know.
I don't care if you drink it.
Yeah, so that was kind of fun. But anyway, you've also done a lot of stage work, including Serena, Queen of the Tango.
That was a great show.
Was she from Argentina?
No, yes.
Yes,
it was
as
all
a matter
about
of fact.
Argentinian. Well, as Serena says, I am not a female impersonator. I am a gender illusionist.
It's
about this very crazy female impersonator from Argentina, played by a dude, who is accused of murdering her husband. It pretty much looks like she did it. And I played the prosecutor in this madness.
Oh my gosh. It was
absolutely nuts. It involved dream sequences, dance numbers, flashbacks, and a surreal courtroom dreamlike scene. It was awesome. And so I put Sarina, Queen of the Tango, on trial for murder. It was absolutely hilarious.
That is that. So now you did that. You've done Butterflies Are Free, Hidden.
When I was a young thing, yes.
Okay. Hidden in the Laughter, Dear Brutus, mm-hmm. The Wool Gatherer, mm-hmm. Cry of the Players, In One Bed and Out of the Other.
That was a good one. In One Bed and Out of the Other, which I believe the original French title was Une Nuit Chez Vous, Madame, One Night at Your House, Madame.
Okay.
And it's a French bedroom farce. And I did this years ago up in Canada. It was a great theater. It was this big, huge chain of dinner theaters up, this big dinner theater. And I went, oh, man, who's going to go to this thing? We're starting in November. I'm going to be done January. Oh, my God, it's going to be winter. You ever been to Edmonton, Alberta?
Never.
It is the cold. Okay, you go any further north, you're just in the Arctic Circle. It's over. I mean, it is so cold.
Seriously?
Up there. And I was in Edmonton, Alberta, November, December, January. Anybody who's been there in the winter will go, oh, what were you thinking? It was 40 below zero on a good day.
Wow.
And there was drifts of snow. And I thought, who is going to come? We got blizzards. It is 40 below. Who is going to come across town, middle of nowhere, and come see this hokey thing in the dinner theater? And this silly show with doors slamming and people in their 90s sold out every night and the matinees. The matinee, New Year's Day matinee. People hung over, coming through the snow to see this thing. I said, well, they go, well, our Christmas show does well. And besides, they said it's 40 below zero. They pay money to see people in their underwear on stage. They haven't seen anybody out of a coat in weeks.
Oh my gosh. I
did this show running around in my underwear for 8 weeks in the snow.
Nice.
Sold out every night. I was amazed.
Nice. Nice.
I would not have believed it if I hadn't seen it myself, but indeed, we packed the place. I'm like, seriously? People are digging this. Okay, there you go.
You packed the place, and I'm sure everybody was just applauding and clapping.
Right.
So now tell me about in 2005 you played this role of Rita in an award nominated production of Last Summer at Bluefish Cove.
Last Summer Bluefish Cove. It's a play. It's been around since the 80s. I just did it a couple years ago. It's very popular. It's about six lesbians in a beach house, essentially. But what it's really about is this woman finds out that she has cancer, and she and her friends are, you know, react to all of this.
Mm-hmm.
But it's about these lesbians and their relationship and how, like, there's the one, the long-term couple, the older woman with the younger girlfriend who's kind of a bimbo. You know, it's every sort of couple that you've ever met, except in this case, they're all female. But it's like you go, I know these people. The couple who can't stop fighting. They're in this beach. It's a fabulous play. And the funny thing is whenever they do this, although all the women in it are gay, straight women always sign up to be in this thing. And it's sort of hilarious. There's always like one woman in the show who's actually gay and says, why do all you straight girls want to be in Last Summer in Bluefish Cove? Because there's like, there's good parts for women. There's not enough good parts for women. And here's six really great parts. So all the straight girls go, I'll do it.
So Rita was one of the lesbians?
Indeed. Rita was the girlfriend slash assistant, long-suffering support to the her girlfriend, Kitty, who's a famous doctor and author and a huge diva and general pain in the ass. And as Rita, I was her protector, translator, secretary, girlfriend, and sort of buffer go-between for when she offends everyone.
Now, was that the first time you've ever played that type of part, like a lesbian part?
I think so.
Was there any heavy research on that, or did you just? What I mean, it seems to me sometimes I go to this local Starbucks and I see every kind of lesbian you can think of, and this is not in San Francisco. This is right in the peninsula, you know. And I mean, anybody that's an actor or actress, we could just hang out there in a Starbucks, and you could just, you know, really study and research the interaction of quite a few different characters. That's what I'm talking about.
In my case, I mean, having, you know, as I said, I was born in New York and grew up in West Hollywood.
Uh-huh.
And
I grew up
in the gay community and very much, you know, ensconced around the gay community and my work in AIDS since the 80s. And yes, mostly probably a lot more probably gay male friends, because being service, but indeed certainly was not like, it's always like, gee, I've never met a lesbian. You know, no, that would not. But yeah, also in this case, the couple were interesting in that, like, even the director said, it's a little like you and your husband, except you'd be the diva one and he'd be the long-suffering. So there were so many similarities to relationships I'd been in. It wasn't difficult as like playing her as a human being, but it is weird how often they do get straight people to play gay people. Of course, you do have gay people playing straight people, but often it's like they're not telling anyone they're doing that. I think more gay actors should come out, because then they could go, look, I just played this straight person. You believe me. I'm brilliant. Because when a straight person plays a gay person, everyone makes a big fuss and they get an award. I just did it because I knew the director, and she said, this girl dropped out and you're awesome and you need to come play Rita. And I went, yes, I shall.
But, you know, I think
I don't want to take work away from real lesbians. So.
Right, right. I think probably now, maybe I'm wrong, but now this is, you know, and I do acting on the side as well. I think I would, if I ever had a role like that I had play a gay male, I don't think it would be comfortable for me, and I don't know that I'd want to do that. Now let me say this. I think women tend to bond at an emotional level with other women.
True.
So sometimes I think that is easier for a woman to, because it's almost like, okay, it's like their best friend, but a little bit like one step.
It's not as hard for women to make the mental jump. Women generally are a little more open to being sort of empathetic, putting themselves in the other person's shoes.
Right.
Women can more easily say, well, I can understand, even the straightest woman in the world can say, I can understand how someone could be gay. I mean, you know, that could happen. I can see how a guy could like another guy, a woman could. Whereas a lot of guys will go, I don't get it, I don't get it, I can't, my brain is locking up. And women don't usually have that response. And then in actual sexuality, women do tend to be a teeny bit more, shall we say, fluid than men. I mean, generally, yes, you pretty much, you're either gay or straight, and you pretty much know it by the time you hit puberty. But there is a lot of back and forth with women. It's very sad. You will hear, well, there's been famous women who go, oh, I'm gay. Oh, wait, no, I'm not now. Like, wait, what? And you don't really see that so much with men. It's a very strange phenomenon. Women will go back and forth and be bi more than guys. A little strange.
Well, you know who I found. You know who I found was blew my mind that she was even a lesbian. Was remember the television show when we were kids, Bewitched? Remember that?
Yes.
So remember Elizabeth Montgomery's mother.
Agnes
Moorehead.
I saw that coming down the road. Come on, Agnes Moorehead? I've always thought that she was gay, and I kind of went, well, yeah.
Wow, I must have been, yeah, I was like
okay,
really shocked.
Okay, Liberace wasn't a shock to you, right? You grew up on the Liberace.
No.
Because, yeah, you know, my father worked for Liberace.
No way, seriously?
My father's a manager. He worked for Seymour Heller & Associates. And if you saw, did you see the thing Candelabra with Matt Damon and Michael Douglas?
No. You know, actually, a buddy of mine and his wife saw it, and he did not like it. He said that they actually just turned it off. They thought it was a little bit over the top. So,
well, you mean it's Liberace. How, what's it going to be but over the top? Liberace was over the top. It's weird. It wasn't really Liberace's story. It was very much, the movie's more Scott Thorson, the boyfriend story. So it was very much from his point of view.
I heard, I don't know if this is true or not, but I heard that he had plastic surgery so he could actually look more like him.
Oh, yes, he did. And at the time, in the late 70s, when they did that, I mean, they were posing for pictures and stuff. And it was like, whoa, dude. And now that Scott Thorson has gotten older, the surgery, well, the ultimate result is now that he's older, he really looks like Liberace.
Oh, no. Are you serious?
Oh, yeah. But, no, they did. He absolutely. He completely asked him to get plastic surgery to look like him. And at the time, he thought this was a swell idea. In the movie, Rob Lowe plays the crazy plastic surgeon. It's quite hilarious.
Oh.
But the character, the guy, well, Dan Aykroyd played the manager, Seymour Heller, who my dad worked for. And I was, he walked on screen and I shrieked. I went, oh, my God, it's Seymour. I mean, he really had it down.
Oh, my gosh.
It was quite impressive. But my dad worked for him, so I would go to Liberace shows when I was a kid. And so I'm 8 years old, and my parents said, now don't say anything because no one must know that Liberace is gay. And I said,
oh, you got to be kidding me.
I
mean, he looked like a parade back then.
Right. I'm like, I'm not blind. I'm eight.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean, hello. I mean, he could have led the whole gay, lesbian, gay pride parade. He probably started it. I mean, he just came out. And I mean, he was
and it was so weird because he kept swearing he was straight. He was like not out, but as I said, the guy's wearing rhinestone hot pants, and he just flew over the damn stage. He was as gay as you could be, and then said, "No, I'm not gay. I don't know what you people are talking about." And he, do you know, Liberace sued a magazine for saying he was gay, and he won.
No way, seriously?
He was proven heterosexual in a court of law. I am not kidding. So
well, you know, I don't know. I mean, just, yeah, I mean, I would see him on interviews.
And it was kind of hard to miss.
Right. I mean,
hi.
You know, I mean, it's like, come on, really? I mean, do you think that...
He was telling people he was straight and that Scott Thorson was his protege who he was going to adopt as his son, and that's why they wore matching fur coats and he was having plastic surgery.
Mm-hmm.
He told me, well, you know, he's not my boyfriend. I don't know what you're talking about. You guys are wearing matching fur coats and jewelry, and he's having plastic surgery to look like you. Yes, he admires me greatly. He's my protege. That's
right.
What he freaking told people.
Right.
And it was just, he was absolutely obsessed with the idea that no, people shouldn't know I'm gay, but it was very bizarre.
Well, and you know, the other ones that really shocked me that I found out, because here, you know, I'm watching this. As a kid, you know, I mean, these are shows that we grew up with as kids. The Brady Bunch.
And
when I found out
one
that,
time, it's amazing.
Right, the Brady Bunch, the dad, and then we were talking about Bewitched. That her husband, both of those husbands were gay.
Yes.
You know, that blew my mind.
Indeed, a lot of people were very shocked by the dad on the Brady Bunch. But my hairdresser dated him, so I kind of.
You were privy to all that, right? Merv Griffin, that was a shock. You know,
I'm not sure I was too surprised by Merv Griffin.
Wow. So anyway,
was Merv Griffin? Did Merv Griffin really come out, or is Merv Griffin? Is he to the end saying he was straight?
I don't know. There was some kind of big lawsuit.
Now
Darren
from Bewitched was way out. Yes.
Yeah.
Dick Sargent was out. He was out. He came out.
But the other Darren was supposedly
the other one. I think he was straight. But Dick Sargent was gay.
No, I thought I
had
heard that.
It'd be funny if he had one straight, one gay. That's kind of hysterical. But Dick Sargent indeed was out, and he came out, and I did a couple talk shows with him. Very cool guy. But, yeah, he came out. It was really a trip.
That is well. Now, I understand, and I can understand completely having spent this time with you on the air now, that you also do, or you've done work as a stand-up comic.
Indeed, still do. I was doing stand-up, like 15 years old I started doing stand-up.
Right.
And then in the last few years, around 2002, I actually morphed it all into this one-woman show called Confessions of a Prairie Bitch, where I get up and tell fabulous real-life true stories, like going to Liberace's show when I was eight and things like that. And I tell all these crazy stories, and it's hysterical. And I talk about Little House, and I have photos and clips and things, and let people
Come
on and try on the wig. And, you know, it's wonderfully nuts. And I do that, and then hence I now have had the book deal, book of the same name, Confessions of a Prairie Bitch, which became a New York Times bestseller. We're very proud.
Yay! Now, is that cool, or is that cool?
It's insanely cool, and you know, it made it to number 15 on the French bestseller list, which was truly amazing.
So that's double cool, and that deserves what? That deserves this. It deserves. That's right.
Yay!
That's right.
I love that. That's very handy. I should have
that's right.
In my house.
So now doing all this, tell me about what do you get when you're doing stand-up comedy?
Mm-hmm.
Now, what you may or may not know about me, I'm also an entertainer, so I do music, and we'll talk about that a little bit later.
Yeah,
I do acting and all that. But, you know, a lot of times when I'm performing and talking and stuff like that, I don't try to be funny. It just comes out naturally, you know?
Exactly.
And then
that's
I've had
the
people go, Joey, you should do stand-up and stuff. You know, I don't think I would like to, because then I would be like, okay, now this is, you know, people have now paid to come and hear me make them, you know, they want to laugh. And if I suck, or if I say something wrong, or if I'm not funny,
right,
they're going to be like, boo, you know, this guy sucks.
Yeah, the pressure,
you know,
is on. They came now specifically for you to be funny. And the pressure,
right,
is now, it's like, well, now what?
Right, exactly. So, you know, what, I mean, is it, when you go out and do that, is there a rush that you get? And, I mean, if you had to, I guess, figure out which one, like, if you like doing, do you like doing television? Do you like doing stage? Do you like doing movies? Do you like doing stand? Do you like doing all of them? Is one, do you like doing one more than any of the other ones? Or is it all about the same? Just,
it's actually, I like them all. I mean, they're different ways. Obviously, like with TV, it's,
yeah,
sort of, you know, very comfortable. You come in, you do it, you get paid a lot,
right,
you go home. But films, you might play a more interesting character, more variety of parts. And then,
right,
in stand-up, though, and in stage, the response is immediate. The audience is there. You find out how you're doing right away.
Right.
Whereas, you know, with TV or a film, you make it, and it's months later before you find out if the audience liked it or not. And then you go, I could have done that better. But if you're on stage, it's like, well, okay, now I know what I'm doing right now.
Right.
And then I do well because, like, yeah, the reason that the act became a storytelling thing is I found that sometimes in telling stories, which I may not have intended to be funny when I first told them,
right,
people are like, no, that's really actually hysterical. Oh, it is. Okay.
Right.
And then it became this whole show. And, you know, I make sure I know what I'm doing before I go on. There are people who will go out on stage and completely 100% wing it.
Right.
They should get a medal. I'm not going to do that.
Right.
I'm going to go out with stuff that I know to at least be reasonably funny.
Right. Which is smart, you know?
Yeah.
I think if you're winging it, you have to have a lot of self-confidence and know for a fact that people are going to find that hysterical and amusing. Otherwise, I think you're just, you know, you're just...
Yeah, because they paid to see you. You're not just, you know, doing this for your own kicks. You're entertaining them. So you need to give them something, for heaven's sake.
Right. So you want to make them laugh.
These people all night. Yeah.
You want, I mean, that's the whole thing. We want to make people laugh.
Like that there.
Right?
Exactly.
So Allison, I want to ask you, you were talking about your book, Confessions of a Prairie,
yeah,
Bitch, and your one-woman show. I understand that one-woman show started at Club Fez in New York, and it's been performed to pack houses in New York, L.A., Seattle, Maui, hey, and the south of France, which is kind of cool. So I want to know, do you speak French?
Oui, je fais mon spectacle en français maintenant.
Wow, okay.
I'm in France all the time. I'm going back in September. I was there in March. I have two shows, Confession d'une gaffe de la prairie and aussi Le mal au trésor de Nelly Olsen, Nelly Olsen's Trunk of Treasures. And I do both of these in France. It's a different extravaganza. Like my American show is me speaking English, talking about American things with clips and photos of American funny stories. And then the French one, it's me and a French guy, Patrick Lebatier, and he tells a story, and then we show a clip, and I tell a story, shows a clip. And then we have clips of it, and it's a lot of it, yes, it's about Little House, and it's about my life, and some of it, there's some stories that are the same as the American show, but most of it are stories about things I did in France, or jokes about French celebrities. So it totally is a French adaptation for the French.
You know, their accent is so... He's so very nice. He's so very different.
Everything,
you know?
Sounds sexy if you say it in French.
Yeah, I mean, it's yeah. Really, you know, I used to work with this girl. She's like, Joey, you know, I am so glad to have the opportunity to once again talk. You know, like I can do Spanish accents because I was raised around it.
Right.
I can do Italian accents, but the French accent is very, it's different. It does have a Latin base to it, but it's very nice.
It comes down from the Latin, but it sounds, I mean, you know, où sont les toilettes? It's, you know, where's the bathroom? It sounds great.
Yeah,
it,
right? Yeah, exactly, right? I mean, you would never know you're asking for the bathroom, right?
Yeah, it doesn't sound like you're asking for the bathroom. It sounds exotic and lovely. So, yeah, we Americans think everything sounds cute in French. It's like, oh, that sounds great. Like,
you know, I wonder, like, if you're, like, you know, like, if you wanted to say to somebody, you know, you're a real dillweed, and you said it in French, it probably would be spectacular, right?
Oh,
and then you could just walk around town going, you know?
Oh,
people go, thank you so much.
If I called you Conab, overcome, Conab, it doesn't sound bad, does it?
Well, you have to tell me what that means,
and
then we'll decide.
Yeah, go look it up, and then you'll find out.
No. Why don't you tell me now?
Well, it basically means stupid, conneries, conas, but it's definitely, it's a-hole, totally, yeah.
Really?
It's total, miserable, stupid a-hole, yeah.
Oh, that's not good.
No, but it sounds lovely. You say it in
what is it?
Like,
say it again?
Conab. Usually they just say con.
Conab. But you know what also sounds like a
they
food
say
item?
Conab or conas, it's bad.
Conab.
That's really bad.
Conat. But, you know, it almost sounds like a food item. Yes, I'd
doesn't
like
it?
That. And then a conat.
I'd
you know?
Like to play
would you,
the
would you
conat,
like your conat warmed?
Yeah.
Yes, I would, you know. Yeah, so let's, Allison, let's talk something that's close to your heart as well.
Yeah.
So I understand you had a television husband, actor Steve Tracy, who played the role of Percival Dalton, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then Steve Tracy passed away due to complication with AIDS in 1986.
Correct.
And then after that, you started to get heavily involved in different AIDS projects in L.A.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me a little bit about that, what that's meant to you. I understand that you also provided AIDS awareness and education to doctors and nurses,
everybody,
prison inmates.
Yeah.
Churches, department stores, schools.
Totally. What happened is when he got sick, he went public with his diagnosis, and
uh-huh.
You know, when nobody was doing that at that time in the 80s, and I, you know, wanted to help him, and he was in a pretty good position. He had friends. His mother stood by him. His mom and his sister flew out and took care of him, and he had insurance, and he had a little money. So he wasn't as destitute or as lonely or as abandoned as so many people who were sick were then. And so I was visiting him, but I found out very quickly that a lot of people at that time with AIDS, their mothers were not flying out to visit them. I mean, nobody was coming. It was bad. And so I started volunteering at AIDS Project Los Angeles so I could help provide services to people who are sick with AIDS who didn't have anything going for them. And they also did education. They had a hotline, the Southern California AIDS Hotline, which is where I met my husband, actually. And they took phone calls from people who were panic-stricken, wanted to know where to get tested, wanted to know, you know, what were the symptoms. People who were already diagnosed wanted to know if they were taking the right medicine, should they see a different
sure.
doctor. People called just saying, help me, my son was just diagnosed, I'm really upset. So I was trained, and I took those calls. And then I also did their speakers bureau, and I did. I got sent out everywhere. I went to prison. I went to, you know, Home Depot. I went to banks. I went to hospitals and wound up doing lectures on AIDS, prevention, transmission, how to help people, every possible subject at different facilities where they needed a speaker. I talked to everybody. It was great. Schools, everywhere.
Wow. And then in 1992, Joel Walks presented you with a resolution by the Los Angeles City Council commending you on your work on behalf of people living with HIV and AIDS. And you continue to serve On the Ambassador Council of the AIDS Project in L.A.? Is that correct?
Yeah, I was on that for a long time, and I do stuff for a lot of different agencies now, too. I mean, I did some.
Oh,
it's
that's
funny.
Awesome.
We're having an APLA reunion, actually, this month. That's going to be a trip. I did a lot of stuff for Lifelong AIDS Alliance in Seattle. I did their AIDS Walk. I did stuff for a lot of smaller AIDS agencies around the country who may not have had a celebrity flying in to do their benefits, you know. And that's the thing people don't realize. You know, there's people with AIDS in Cedar Rapids, Iowa, and Denton, Texas, and they need help, too. And so I did that. And then currently I'm on the board of PROTECT, the National Association to Protect Children. Prior to that, I also, towards the end of AIDS year, I was with a group called Tuesday's Child, where I was on staff, and we were taking care of families with children with HIV, with AIDS, and helping kids with AIDS. And, yeah, that was pretty rough stuff. It was pretty hard. But we at least saw to it that, you know, they got their Christmas parties, they got their cribs, they got their diapers, they got what they needed. We got them outings, bicycles, Santa Claus.
How awesome is that? That's very, very cool. You know, so many people, both famous and infamous, could learn so much from you in regards to reaching out and compassion, and that's awesome. You know, really, quite honestly, that's what it's about. You know, when you're able to take your persona and and your celebrity and say, you know what, I'm laying this down, and this is part of who I am, but also part of who I am is a human being that's compassionate and that cares about other people, and I'm willing to reach out and help. I think that's awesome. So, you know, thank you so much for doing that for people. And also, this is where it comes, where it's really close to my heart, where you there's a lot of child abuse in across the United States. Now, I don't know if you heard part of what I when I was talking about the hot topics and about that 25-year-old father that put his child in a freezer.
Yeah, and the reason the mother had to go next door to call the police is when she came home and said, "Why is the baby in the freezer?" And he, you know, gave her whatever lame excuse. The child also had multiple bruises, guts, broken bones, everything. And when the mother said, "Oh my God, what's going on?"
Right.
She grabbed the phone. He said, "Don't call the police." And she tried to call 911, and he hit her and knocked the phone out of her hand and tried to physically prevent her from calling the cops. She had to go next door. Just unspeakable.
Right. Absolutely unspeakable. And I hope and pray that child's going to be okay, you know.
We don't know how bad he beat her. I mean, it's unbelievable.
But I understand that you work really, you're a strong advocate for the rights of children. So why don't we talk a little bit about that, and let's talk about something that I was just blown away that is rampant throughout the United States that's actually legal. Why don't you tell people about this? Because I think you can do
It's a huge freaking loophole is what it is. What happened is in the 70s when they raised the penalties around the country, started really raising the penalties, you know, up until the 50s, 60s, I mean, people don't realize. We think of, you know, child abuse as like a new thing. It's not. And we think, oh, things are getting more lax. It's like we've only started even cracking down on this in the last 20 years. It's ridiculous. Up until 1950, rape of a child in the state of California was punishable by was a misdemeanor punishable by 30 days in jail. And it wasn't until a guy who had done his 30 days for raping a child, and everybody thought this was fine to let him out, raped and killed the kid, and everybody went, wait, what do you mean? The average person went, what do you mean rape's a misdemeanor? What are you talking about? That's when they began to up penalties. In the 70s, when they realized that the penalties were so low and people were getting away with stuff, they kind of ratcheted up, and really it was in the late 70s we started seeing real sentences for raping a child. And we also started seeing things like mandatory reporting, where if someone told a teacher or doctor they were being sexually abused, they had to call the cops. So this was like, yay. Well, what then happened is a lot of people who were sexually abusing children and their lawyers got together and said, yeah, we don't want to go to jail. So they lobbied, because anybody can go to D.C. or your state capitol and have a lobbyist and fight to change laws. Even criminals can do this. So what you have is in many states an incest exception.
And now, can you say that again, please?
Yeah, I know. It's just people go, the what? Incest exception. Yep. It's a gigantic, huge loophole. If you sexually abuse, if you sexually molest a child,
who is related to you, you are held to a completely different legal standard than if you raped the kid next door. If it's your daughter or your niece or your nephew, as opposed to the kid next door, you got a completely different legal ballpark.
Really?
You can do zero jail time. What you do is, in the older states, there were two forms of it. In the older states, and at Protect, we did fix this in several states. In North Carolina, one of the first states that Protect went into and went, no, 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 you don't want to do this. We fixed them. Was what they were using was an 1800s law. In the 1800s, they passed a law that incest was a crime, but it didn't say anything about children. It meant, like, don't marry your 30-year-old cousin. So it wasn't a serious crime. It was often a misdemeanor, maybe a year in jail tops. Probation, totally available. So what would happen is a guy who had repeatedly raped his own child would get hauled in and charged with rape, charged with sodomy, charged with child abuse, charged with everything.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And instead of that, would say, I'd like to plead guilty to incest. And they'd let him do it. And instead of going on trial for rape and doing 20 years, he would plead to incest and do no jail time.
And do no jail time.
Right, and get probation. Because it wasn't a serious offense. And people were doing this all over the place. Now, it gets worse. Those are the people who were using an 1800s incest law, which was, incidentally, was listed as a crime against the marital state. Like adultery.
So this gets worse?
It gets worse. I mean, it would be like if someone raped a total stranger and said, I want to plead guilty to adultery, we're not married. You know, it was the same legal concept, but they did it. Now, we stamped that out in, of all places, North Carolina and Arkansas. Arkansas was willing to fix its incest law, just for the record, because they make jokes about Arkansas. But Arkansas was like, no, we're going to clean this up. So then we go to California, where they did it on purpose. California, Illinois, a couple other places did a law where in the 80s, because penalties were higher, they changed the law. And I had a copy. I had to go around with a copy of the law in my purse because when I was doing this, nobody believed me this was on the books. I had to go, no, here,
yeah.
It's on the books. Section 1203.66, blah, blah, blah. I put, it would list all the horrible, horrible things you could do to a kid.
Mm-hmm.
And the penalties, and would say, yes, this is jail, and blah, 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 you go to prison.
Mm-hmm.
And then it said, in capital letters, unless, comma, the perpetrator is the child's parent, step-parent, grandparent, aunt, uncle, or like a family member living in the home.
Or like a family member?
Like
what's
a family?
Like,
oh,
a family?
Borders, I don't know. Right?
You're not my uncle, but you're like a family member.
Like a family member, so we'll let you go.
Man.
So
unreal.
It
this
meant,
is
basically meant mom's boyfriend could get off the hook.
That's ridiculous.
And it said, unless they're this, in which case they're eligible for probation, no time served, and deferred entry of judgment, which means it's not on their record, which means not registered sex offender, and a guy could rape four daughters and then open a daycare center the next year because he'd have no record.
This is unbelievable.
And they were doing this. They did this in California. They were doing this in New York. They were doing this in Illinois. They were doing all over the place. And they were getting away with it. And we went in and said, no, this is a bad idea. This is bad. You shouldn't be doing this. And we actually, you would think, you'd come in and say, did you know this is on the books? And they'd say, ooh, yuck. No, they wanted to keep it because, a lot of attorneys rather liked it because their clients didn't go to jail. And it took us 2 years. And we did change that in California. It's no longer the law in California. They did strike that. And it was amazing because it included things like multiple victims, continuous sexual abuse, really, really horrible stuff. It wasn't like lesser offenses. It was horrible
mm-hmm.
offenses.
Mm-hmm.
And we actually found a young woman who had been one of the test cases.
Mm-hmm.
Her stepfather had sexually abused her. He was released under the incest exception, came back in the home, and then proceeded to rape her sister after she was told, it's fine. And so she testified. We also had a woman who testified that when she was a little girl, her father sexually abused her, and she was ordered to go to court-ordered therapy with her stepdad who'd raped her. And she said, I don't feel like going to court-ordered therapy with him. I'd just kind of like to not talk to him ever again. And they said, no, it's court-ordered. If you don't go, we'll put you in juvenile hall.
Now I have a question for you.
Yes.
So how many of these cases, or do you know what, I mean, are there cases, too, where it's not just little girls, it's little boys at this
point? Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're not.
They're not as common, right?
Well, it's but the majority of children who are sexually abused are girls.
Right.
The majority, it's a dude. In fact, I had a defense attorney during a radio show where I was on with a defense attorney, and I had a defense attorney, and he was arguing about one of the, like, Jessica Law things, saying, well, no, it's not stranger danger, it's families. And, of course, I said, that's funny, because, like, last week in Sacramento, you were saying it wasn't the fathers, but fine. This defense lawyer said on air that in 25 years of being a defense lawyer, he had never had a case of sexual abuse that wasn't the father. Now, it's one guy, but he, like, worked in a big city, and we're talking over 25 years. He never had a single child molester who wasn't the kid's dad. That's pretty bad.
I just can't believe, you know, that this stuff goes on. It's hard to digest.
Revolting. But at Protect, we're trying to get all these laws in line. In 7 states, we killed off the worst offenders. We removed the incest exception in California and New York,
mm-hmm.
which are two
mm-hmm.
of the worst offenders, and
mm-hmm.
Illinois and Arkansas
mm-hmm.
and North Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
We've also got a thing called the Leashes Law, which has to do with getting state funding for the FBI teams, the Individual Internet Crimes Against Children Task Force,
mm-hmm.
the ITAC,
mm-hmm.
to track the child porn exploitation, keeping
mm-hmm.
them in business, and making higher penalties for that kind of stuff. And it's based on this girl, Alicia, who was kidnapped at 13 by
mm-hmm.
a pedophile freak who had her in the basement, and had the FBI not used the technology they were able to trace his computer, they would not have found her. And, well, she wouldn't be around anymore. But so it has to do with fighting this on a technological level, because these guys are pretty savvy. We've got a big campaign right now at Protect. We're really working on trying to fight the huge wave of child pornography that's gotten really, really bad, because people are, you know, uploading, doing live streaming video of stuff. I mean, it's mind-boggling, the stuff they're doing.
That's unreal.
The cops now have the technology to trace this stuff and arrest them, but it's just getting them the resources, the manpower, the usual stuff. And we've actually been shockingly successful in doing that. We do have people in Washington, D.C. and at the different state levels, and we have actually succeeded in getting laws passed, in getting more funding for the FBI, for law enforcement, for these teams.
So, Allison, help me out here. If people want to jump on the bandwagon, they want to help
mm-hmm.
you out, they want to get involved in this, tell the audience, tell the listeners how they can do that.
Well, swing by the website, protect.org. Can't get much simpler than that.
Okay.
And they've got all kinds of keen stuff up there. It's a marvelous thing we're about to launch, the HERO program,
okay.
which has to do with getting returning disabled veterans hooked up with the ICAC teams.
Mm-hmm.
So here you've got people who are looking for a job and
mm-hmm.
are very highly trained,
mm-hmm.
and here you have the Internet Crimes Against Children Task Force, who are shorthanded and desperately need people, and
mm-hmm.
we're trying to see if we can't get these two people together and make this happen.
Awesome. Again, give the web address again.
Absolutely. Protect.org, and we've
That's
got all
pretty
kinds
easy.
Of work. Yeah, really easy. All our stuff about Alicia's Law, about the child porn, about, as we say, how to become a protector, all the articles, the Weiss Center for Child Rescue and Protection Technology,
mm-hmm.
our accountability transparency laws we're getting passed,
wow.
about where they have to be able to, just like you can look up a politician's record, you can look up in your area what if crimes got prosecuted, a prosecutor's record. If you know that 5,000 people got arrested for sexual abuse of children, do you want to know how many of those actually went to trial?
But
things are so bureaucratic that often people have no idea. So we're talking
mm-hmm.
about sunlight and accountability programs, so that all of these things, most people, like, for instance, you didn't know there was an incest exception.
Mm-mm.
Most people have no idea the scale of the child porn problem. People don't realize the incredible loopholes in the laws, the bureaucracy, and the stuff that's going on out there that does not protect children, that makes it very, very difficult for children to defend themselves, and makes it really easy for pedophiles to do what they do.
I'm sure the president was probably just absolutely shocked. I'm sure that, you know, I mean, you know, these things are not, I mean, I never would have even guessed when I first heard about this, mm-hmm. that this was legal and simple.
It's like a walk. They walk them. And we see this a lot. We see a lot of people who, like, you know, you hear about people being on probation and having, like, the ankle monitor. These aren't people who, quote, did their time. These are people who got this instead of time. There's a lot of people get convicted of raping children, and they say, well, you know, my client will wear an ankle monitor and promise to be nice. And, oh, okay, off you go. And this happens all the time. And then the guy cuts the ankle bracelet off, and people go, why was this man not in jail? So we look at a lot of that. At Protect, we're like, maybe that's a bad idea.
Gosh.
Because clearly what we're doing is not working, so we need to ramp it up a bit.
Well, bless you for doing what you're doing. I think that is awesome. Let me ask you, tell me what else is on the horizon for you, Allison?
So much. Let's see. Saturday, I head over to Washington, D.C. I'm actually doing a big meet and greet for the nice folks at the Inspiration TV channel, INSP TV, who run Little House. Then I'm going over to Nelly's Sports Bar. I swear there's a place in Washington, D.C. called Nelly's Sports Bar. It's not mine, but I wish it was. It's awesome. They give me T-shirts. I'm doing a book signing. I'll be signing Confessions of a Prairie Bitch. You can come buy a copy of the book and get it signed at Nelly's Sports Bar on Tuesday the 11th at 6 p.m. at Nelly's. Then I go over to New York. I have two shows next weekend, the Laurie Beachman Theater in New York City on 42nd, Friday and Saturday. I will be performing Confessions of a Prairie Bitch.
I see. So you're pretty busy, right?
July, I got Wisconsin. August, I got Mumford, New York. I go back to France the end of September. And then 2014 is looming because, you know, that's the 40th anniversary of Little House in the Prairie.
That's unbelievable. Really?
And so we're going to have a lot of events for that. So.
Wow. Well, you know, time has got, I mean, it's unbelievable. We've actually been talking for probably a little bit over an hour. It's been a pure joy. I want you to let people know how they can get in touch with you personally.
I'm everywhere. I three different Facebook pages. I got a website, which is hgd.com/Allison, but, you know, Google me, babe. It's Allison. It's the official Allison Arngrim Confessions of a Prairie Bitch Nellie Olson website. I have three Facebook pages. It's Allison Arngrim or Allison M. Arngrim. I'm on Twitter, at Arngrim, really easy. I'm on Tumblr. I'm everywhere. And there's a Nellie Olson newsletter. You can get the Nellie newsletter from me. That goes out. So you just go to the website or Facebook. Tell me you want the newsletter. We'll hook you up. And visit the gang at protect.org and see what they're doing and see if you want to join in.
That's awesome. Well, on behalf of Live from the Bay with Joey, I'd like to thank you so much for joining us and sharing about your career, about your book, about those things that are very important to you, that motivate you, that, you know, where you're able to reach out in compassion to people that really do need love and compassion. And thank you for what you're doing for children out there. I mean, that's just, that's awesome as well. So, again, thank you so much for taking the time to join us tonight. And so you're welcome back at any time.
Oh, thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right.
So we'll look forward to hearing more about your career. And, again, folks, she gave you the information, the websites, where you can reach her. She's on Facebook. And again, the other one that you were on that you mentioned earlier.
Oh, I'm on Facebook, Twitter, Tumblr, LinkedIn. I'm pretty much everywhere. And then my website, you can go to, it's hgd.com/Allison is the address. But if you Google me, my website comes up, the official Allison Arngrim Confessions of a Prairie Bitch Nellie Olson website.
Okay. Thanks so much, Allison.
Okay.
All right. Great talking to you.
Okay. Bye.
Folks, it was so wonderful having her join us this evening. And, you know, time just flew on by. So, anyway, I would just like to thank you once again for taking time to listen. And this was such a great show with such a wonderful, again, just a wonderful celebrity that's reaching out to so many people. on behalf of all of us here, live from the Bay with Joey. This is Joey saying, you know, take care. Make sure you watch our website. We have plenty of great shows coming up. There's also shows in the archive that you might want to take a listen to. And again, thanks so much. And we'll look forward to our next show next week, next Wednesday night, 8 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. Thanks again, folks. Take care.
Thank you for joining us today on Live from the Bay with Joey.